This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, broadcasting today from member station KJZZ in Phoenix, Arizona. The fact that Latinos now form the largest minority in the country comes as no surprise to political professionals. They've known for a long time that the various groups we lump together as Latinos can play a key role in any number of races, beginning with the vote next month in California. Last week, the 9 Democratic presidential candidates debated in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where Hispanic Democrat Bill Richardson is the governor. Next month, they'll be right here in Phoenix for another debate, which will be hosted by another Democrat, Arizona Governor Janet Napolitano. Next year, both of these heavily Hispanic states will be newly prominent in the presidential primary process. New Mexico and Arizona come up just a week after New Hampshire. And many feel that the Latino vote is up for grabs, or at least less reliably Democratic than it has been up till now. Today, in this special broadcast from Phoenix, we'll talk about Latino voters as a political force, the issues on which they're united, and about the differences among Mexicans, Cubans, Puerto Ricans, Central Americans, and others. Wherever in the country you are, we'd like to hear from you, especially our Latino listeners. Is either party trying to address your concerns? And if so, how? Even though we're in Phoenix, you can call us on the same number as always. That's 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and you can send email to the usual address, TOTN@npr.org. Joining us now from our bureau in New York is Rodolfo de la Garza, a professor of political science at Columbia University. He's also vice president of the Tomas Rivera Policy Institute, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
We know that Latinos are the largest minority. Traditionally, though, they have not voted in proportional numbers. We just got the Annenberg election survey of the 2000 vote, and it says that Latinos amounted to something like 10% of the voting population, but just about 6.5% of the vote. Why is it, do you think, that the Latino vote has been lower than proportional?
Well, the first point is that you've got to separate out the non-citizen. And the non-citizen segment of the Latino population is actually larger than the voting population. It's very large and growing continuously. Then the question, once you do that, the question is between those Latino adults who are citizens and those who aren't, why don't they vote at the same rates as Anglos, let's say? Mm-hmm. And that's a real puzzle. There is no clear answer to that. One of the major factors is their demographics. Young people, less educated people, vote less than others. And Latinos are, by and large, younger and less educated. Lower income people vote less. They are Latinos, by and large, of lower incomes. But even when you control for that, they still vote less. And one of the major reasons that we now think that's the case is that, rhetoric aside, there is really very little systematic effort to try to bring them into elections. The Republican Party in 2000, for example, despite all of its hoopla, did very little of that. The Democrats did it sporadically. So there's no recruitment effort of a systematic nature that helps overcome the impact of low income, low education, etc.
The analysts say something like 7 million Latino voters went to the polls in 2000, and some say they expect that to double in 2004. Do you agree? And if so, how is that going to happen?
Absolutely not. You'll never double that. You'll increase it, and you'll increase it, one, as a function of people getting older. You'll increase the numbers voting as a function of the naturalized who might be recruited out. But the most important impact will be as a consequence of campaigns that target turnout. Now, I want to distinguish here between turning out a voter and registering a voter. Historically, with the African American, registering was tantamount to voting. For Latinos, it's never. There was a moment in Texas when that was the case, but by and large, that is not the case. So that all of the emphasis that goes into registering voters has of course some consequence of increasing turnout, but not much. The real way to increase turnout is to spend a lot of money, a lot of time in getting those people who are registered to the polls. Unions are very good at that. Short of that, there really is nobody doing it very well.
One of the problems with registration, at least in the past, has been that it's been viewed as something of a partisan issue because the Latino vote was heavily Democratic. The more Latinos you register, the more Democrats you're registering, which made Republicans relatively reluctant to do it.
Well, that's true. But it seems to me that registration, if anything in this country, should be sacrosanct. It's registering people to vote. But I want to emphasize again, if you didn't register one new Latino, but emphasize turning out the ones who are already registered, you could increase Latino turnout dramatically. It's not the problem of registering them. That would show up over time. It's the problem of getting those who are registered to vote.
Now, in the last couple of minutes, we were talking about Latinos as a group, but obviously there are important differences in background and in culture among them. It's one of the things I know that you study. Tell us a little bit about the differences among the various groups that we call Latino.
Well, there are differences associated with national origin: Cubans, Puerto Ricans, Mexicans, Salvadorans, Dominicans. At one level, those differences are culturally very real. It's not so clear that they are politically so real, the Cubans being the exception to that. If you look at the concerns that Latinos have as a group, they are rather relatively common. The major issue for Latinos, and it has been for as long as we've been able to gather data, has been education. Latinos of all nationality care about education. Latinos, similarly, because of their working class status, as overall, care about the economy and jobs. Once you get past that, then you get into the kind of local issues or state issues. And it's really important here to emphasize that what we often associate with differences among the groups, Puerto Ricans versus Mexicans, for example, may be really a reflection of the differences in the states rather than the differences in the groups. For example, Mexican Americans in Texas look much more like, on major policy issues, like the Cubans in Florida, mm-hmm. whereas the Mexican Americans in California look much more like the Puerto Ricans. And if you look at the states, New York is a liberal state. California has been a liberal state. Texas is a conservative state. Mexicans learn how to be conservative in Texas. Latinos in Florida learn how to be conservative. So you want to make certain that you separate out the issues that are salient to groups from the role that states play. One of the big issues, of course, that separates the groups is Cubans' concern with Castro. That's not an issue for most Latinos. It's simply not of concern. Immigration is an issue for everybody at some level. It's not a big issue, but it's not a concern for Puerto Ricans. They're all citizens. And if it becomes a concern for the Puerto Rican general public, it might be more negative than positive because of the influx of immigrants who then become job competitors.
Hmm. Now, you have written that they basically have an immigrant agenda. These are mostly people who are essentially Catholic. Obviously, they speak the same language, whose countries of origin, you write, have a common history of an antagonistic relationship with the United States. But their fundamental agenda is to opportunity to work, advance themselves, and education, as you mentioned, and obviously their children.
That's right. And what I mean by that is the Latino agenda per se has been taken over by the issues of the immigrants. So that where once Latinos were concerned about civil rights, much of that has been addressed more or less effectively. So you have mobility among Mexicans, you have mobility among the native-born Puerto Ricans. What the new immigrants coming in are facing a new set of problems. They've organized, they've made their voice heard, and so to the extent that there's a new issue, a new set of issues for Latinos, it disproportionately reflects immigrants. It's about naturalization, it's about jobs, it's about providing the kind of education that families who are not native English speakers can need so that their children will make it.
Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN@npr.org. And let's get a caller in. Greg joins us on the line from San Diego.
Yes, good morning. It's morning still.
It's morning in Phoenix, too.
Taking my call. My observation here in San Diego is that there really are two very separate societies. I hesitate to use the word that has such harsh connotations, but it really is almost an apartheid state because you have two peoples, Latino and English-speaking people, living side by side, but yet apart. And it just is so incredibly apparent. A white person may have a Mexican housekeeper or gardener, and, you know, the relationship is there. But in terms of social friendships, it's non-existent. But the point in terms of voting that I feel is very relevant here is that many Mexican-Americans may have relatives, mothers, fathers, brothers who are in this country without documentation, and there is kind of an abiding fear, if you will, or reticence to get involved with government at any level, that there's kind of a suspicion of government and a willingness to a built-in apathy that the people have come here to get a better life, but they haven't come here for political reasons as much as economic. So politics is kind of off in the background, and there is no one leader, no one Martin Luther King as such, you know, to coalesce the Mexicans and Mexican-Americans that I see here in San Diego.
Greg, they don't come along all that often, but let's get a response from Rodolfo de la Garza.
Well, I think to the extent that what was just said makes is, I would agree with, it's that there is a separation. I know San Diego reasonably well, but the separation is primarily, not exclusively, primarily between the immigrants, the immigrant Mexican who doesn't know English, who has limited job skills, and the Anglo. There is also a Mexican-American community in San Diego that has penetrated, that is professional, that is more established, that is going through schools. And this is the dilemma with the Latino. It is the mixing of the immigrant and the native-born so as to homogenize them, when in fact they have different interests, they have different demographics, and negative attitudes toward the immigrant will spill over immediately to the native-born. We saw this with Prop 187,
mm-hmm. which was in California,
which was initially about immigrants, but it was so sweeping that all the Mexicans in California said, they're out to get me.
We're talking with Rodolfo de la Garza. When we come back from a break, we'll take more of your calls, 800-989-8255, email totn@npr.org. We're talking about the fastest growing political force in the country, Latinos. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Phoenix, Arizona. We're talking about how much and what kind of political force Latino voters will be in this coming campaign year and in the future of American politics. Of course, you're invited to join our discussion. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN at npr.org. Our guest is Rodolfo de la Garza, professor of political science at Columbia University, vice president of the Tomas Rivera Policy Institute in Los Angeles. And joining us now from his office in San Antonio, Texas, is Republican strategist and media consultant Frank Guerra. He's worked on a number of political campaigns, including George Bush's 2000 presidential bid and last year's reelection campaign of Florida Governor Jeb Bush. And it's good of you to join us on Talk of the Nation.
Good afternoon, Neil.
Republicans, at least in the presidential election, rather surprised the Democrats with the percentage of the Latino vote. How key is this element of the voting community to the future of the Republican Party?
It's really critical, Neil. If you take a look at the way the population is growing, there's no way that any party, I don't care who you are, can avoid the Hispanic vote. And the reason it's particularly critical to the Democratic Party is because every one vote that the Republicans capture is a two-for-one, because they lose one and we capture one. So it really is truly a critical vote.
Yet we see more and more Latinos registering themselves as independents, don't we?
Yes, I would say that that is the case. And in most states, you actually don't register as either, but in those that you do, you see a lot of independents. And I think that that speaks to the essence of what we're saying as Republicans, and that is that not all Hispanics are Democrats, not all Hispanics are liberal, that in fact there are a great number of independents and conservatives. In the 2000 presidential campaign, we helped draft a national survey. It was really the first, one of the first true, completely dedicated political surveys that was done, ideological political survey of Hispanics in America, and we saw some fascinating information about Hispanics on how they self-describe themselves. And what we saw was that, you know, roughly 45% said that they were Democrat or lean Democrat, 30% said that they were Republican or lean Republican, and 25% of that voting block said they were independent or they had not made up their mind. And that, as you can imagine, is a huge prize in American politics today.
A lot of Latinos, though, have identified historically with the Democratic Party, and in recent years there have been issues like Prop 187 in California, which we mentioned, which seem to alienate a lot of Latino voters. There's been analysis that suggests that the president's tax cuts don't necessarily benefit Latinos in the same proportion that they benefit other groups. What issues do you think resonate with Latinos, Republican issues I'm talking about?
I think that many issues resonate. Education, small business. I mean, if you take a look at Hispanics and how they're employed, the vast majority either own a small business or work for a small business. Everything from health care to immigration, on all of these issues, I think particularly with President Bush, if you take a look at some of the things that he's done on those issues, you will find components of that or parts of that they're going to resonate with Hispanics. But let me step away from national politics for a moment and go into one district, because I think it will tell you a little bit about what the potential is. Henry Bonilla is the congressman from Texas, and he represents about 800 miles of Texas-Mexico border. I've been involved with all of the congressman's campaigns since he first ran in 1992. And when we first ran Congressman Bonilla, it was very interesting because there were many Hispanics who had never, ever voted for a Republican. And over time, some of them became Republican. And over time, some of those folks actually ran as Republicans. And the reason we saw that progression and that evolution is because something really interesting happened, and it was this. We simply got into the neighborhoods and we talked to them. We communicated issues. And what they found is not only on the issues was there a connection, but there was a connection on values, everything from family and hard work, the American dream, patriotism. And what you find right now with new immigrants that are coming to the U.S., if you really think about it, Neil, folks who come here, they're looking for symbols of Americanism. What is it that is American? And one of the things that's at the top of that list is the president. And you have right now a president who can communicate to, understands, and is paying attention to the Hispanic as a citizen. And the net effect of that will be that the Hispanic as a voter will respond. So I've seen an amazing firsthand transformation when Republicans communicate to Hispanics.
Rodolfo de la Garza, go ahead.
Yeah, there's a couple of things. This is, I'm not a party representative, okay, and I don't poll for either party. But I'm going to what has just been described is what I call the Republican claim that Hispanics are natural Republicans. Let me point out that the first national survey of Latinos, where all of that same kind of information was produced, we did it, and we did it in 1990. It has continued to be used. And there's a number of very important things. There is no doubt that on some of these values, that is, family, religion, there is a compatibility with Republicans. I think it grossly overstates the fact that other people can be Catholic, can be share those religious values and not be Republican. Look at the Irish, very religious, very family-oriented. Look at Jews, religious, family-oriented. Nobody calls them Republicans. Now, more fundamentally, because I think the Bonilla illustration is marvelous, Bonilla has run twice against strong Democratic candidates. He never has won the majority of Latino votes. He loses the Mexican-American votes and is elected by Anglos in that district. This last election, they could not call Bonilla's victory until well into the next day because all of the Latino precincts that came in early were for his opponent. His opponent led until the very end when the Anglo districts of San Antonio reported. Now, I think that's all really crucial. And one final point that's really essential to understand. George Bush had this claim of a strong outreach. He got, depending on what poll you read, about minimum of 34%, maximum of 37% of the Latino vote in the country. Ronald Reagan did better than that. The way to construct the Republican approach is if they do less than 25%, they're in really bad shape. If they do more than 35%, they're doing very well. So you give them, if you're an analyst, 25 to 35% is what you would expect them to get.
Let's get a response from Frank Guerra.
Respond to that very quickly. First of all, I'm a little closer to the Bonilla campaign, and I disagree with the analysis. Number two, the reason that all the early votes came in and were overwhelmingly for our opponent was simply because the person we were running against was from Laredo, and so was the gubernatorial candidate, a Hispanic who spent $60 million, a record number, and was beaten by Governor Perry with 35% of the vote, of the Hispanic vote. That drove a lot of vote up in that area, so I think that that's a little misleading. In terms of President Bush, you know, whether he captured 35 or 37%, yes, percentage-wise, less than Ronald Reagan, but in terms of the number of sheer votes, President Bush captured more Hispanic voters than any other national figure at the top of the ticket.
But that's because there's more voters.
Rodolfo de la Garza, we're going to have to leave this aside for just a moment. We want to get another listener involved, and let's go on the line now to Felipe, who's with us from Indianapolis.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Felipe.
How are you, sir?
Very well, thanks.
First of all, I want to thank you for the program. It's very good. I'm a Cuban-American, born in Cuba, and been here most of my life, educated here. One of the things that your guest mentioned that I appreciated was hearing, the differences as far as Cubans, you know, having issues with the Castro situation versus different issues. That's very interesting. Something that I wanted to add to that is Indianapolis is a relatively new Hispanic community, and that is a huge issue, too, in the sense that in different locations or geographical locations of the country, the Hispanic community is at different places, if you will, on the sidewalk of progressing. And so Indianapolis is relatively new, and we are now in the process of establishing leadership, of establishing the ways of dealing with that. We have a lot of support from Mayor Peterson, as well as both senators in areas and in needs that we have. But the primary needs here, with the population being 60% plus Mexican, is obviously immigration issues. One of the big things, or one of the issues that I have, is I like to see the jobs that he mentioned. I'd like to see immigration issues dealt with. In other words, people that are here supporting this economy should not be treated as second class citizens. And I think that at some point I would like to see the national political arena deal more effectively with not treating people that are here, you know, that their status is not completely established, but that, in fact, come here to work, to support their families, and to not get in trouble, but to actually, you know, help America. I heard from the Mexican Council 2 weeks ago when we met that there's literally over $1 trillion in our coffers, that every Hispanic represents about $1,800 surplus in the national coffers. So a lot of times you talk to people that think that Hispanics come here to use services, which in fact they're not. In fact, they're contributing to this economy and really not drawing services back because of their status.
Well, thanks very much, Felipe. We appreciate the phone call.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
And Frank Guerra, we thank you for your time today. We know you're busy.
Neil.
Frank Guerra is a Republican strategist and a media consultant. He was with us from his office in San Antonio, Texas. And joining us now from Capitol Hill in Washington is Congressman Bob Menendez from New Jersey, the third highest-ranking Democrat in the House. He chairs the House Democratic Caucus, and it's good of you to join us today on Talk of the Nation.
Pleasure to be with you, Neil.
We've been talking about the importance of the Latino vote to both parties. And after the debate that was, last week in Albuquerque, you were pretty critical of all of the Democratic presidential candidates for what you felt was their, well, I'm not going to speak your feelings. You said them pretty well. You said none of them seemed to seize the opportunity.
Well, actually, my criticism was before the debate, and in hope that from the first debate that we had with NALEO, the National Association of Latino Elected Officials, that they would seize upon the opportunities of debates that, while yes, were an opportunity to paint their broad agenda for the American people, but were specifically geared to Americans of Hispanic descent. And it seemed to me that the candidates failed to capture the opportunity. For example, a lot of the questions were about Iraq. And all Americans care about Iraq. But none of them really made mention of the fact of the enormous percentage of our armed forces who happen to be of Hispanic descent who are serving in Iraq today and how our community is directly affected by that policy. Very few of them recognized when they were talking about education, for example, which is a crucial issue in our community, that this administration, number one, did away with the Hispanic Education Action Program, which the Congressional Hispanic Caucus had devised under the former administration, particularly dealing with dropout rates, which unfortunately our community suffers the highest percentage of dropout rates of any other group in the country. And so while you could paint broad policy statements on Iraq, on education, on health care, on a variety of issues, the ability to say that I understand how these issues specifically affect the Hispanic community, and here's how my proposals will benefit all Americans, yes, but here's how they will specifically benefit Americans of Hispanic descent, was missing. And I think that they lose enormous opportunities to strike that responsive chord with our electorate, which is understandably very supportive of the Democratic Party because of its long history of support on crucial issues that they care about, but by the same token is undergoing probably a significant challenge by the Republicans who feel that maybe they can make some headway, although their plan is not to try to win the majority of our communities, just to diminish the percent of the Democratic support. And finally, they had an opportunity with this, with the failings of this president. Our community, in a recent poll conducted by Sergio Bendixson, showed that they are no longer enamored with President Bush. They feel that there have been a series of broken promises. Broken promises on education, where we say leave no child behind, and yet we leave the education of Hispanic youth billions of dollars short, where we undo the Hispanic Education Action Plan, particularly the dropout effort, which is so important to us. Broken promises with Mexico, in which we have not entered into a bilateral migratory agreement, which is in the national interests of the United States as well as of Mexico, in the national interests of our economy. Broken promises on the Hispanic
unemployment
rate.
Congressman Bob Menendez is with us from Capitol Hill. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I'm sorry to have interrupted you there, but
sure.
The dictates of format. Can you take a phone call with us?
Surely.
Carlos joins us on the line from Grand Rapids in Michigan. Good of you to join us on Talk of the Nation.
Yes, as an educated Chicano, I wanted to say that I feel a little bit better about myself knowing now why I voted on Republican issues in the past, yet felt strongly liberal on others. And listening to your speaker today, I feel a little bit more educated about why I've felt this ambivalence. But I want to really bring home a message that I think is important for both parties to understand, is that you can go out and recruit, and you can go out and get the Hispanic voters or Latino voters educated with the issues that are important to either party. But it's not until you start making appointments and making Latinos part of the actual Democratic or Republican picture, do you accomplish anything. And I find that extremely frustrating, especially with Clinton and now with our president, who really hasn't shown me as somebody who is being courted by all parties, hey, what are you doing for me, and how are you going to show me that you are serious about this by making a national appointment and saying, you know what, we really want you to be a part of this picture. You can go out and recruit all you want, but until you make me a part of this picture and you can take me to the voters and say, you know what, we have a Chicano or we have a Latino here in Washington, D.C., and they are your voice, nothing's going to change. Nothing's going to change.
Let's get a quick response from Congressman Menendez.
Well, I it's a continuing frustration, but there is one party that has a far better record. That's why 20 of the members of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus happen to be Democrats. That's why I, as the chairman of the Democratic Caucus, have the privilege of being the highest-ranking Hispanic in congressional history in either party, in either house, in the history of the Congress. I'm a Democrat. That's why Bill Richardson is the governor of New Mexico. That's why Cruz Bustamante is the lieutenant governor of California and the primary candidate, should the recall pass, for governor of California, one of the largest states in the country and an economy that is not only large in our country but in the world, and I could go on and on. So we have put our candidates from our community there, and that's why we strike a responsive chord with our electorate.
We need to take a short break, Congressman. Can you stay with us for a couple of minutes?
I'll try to stay for a couple more minutes.
Okay, we know you're busy up there on Capitol Hill. We hope Congressman Bob Menendez will be back with us when we return from a short break, and Rodolfo de la Garza will be back with us as well as we continue talking about the influence of Latino voters on Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, broadcasting today from KJZZ in Phoenix, Arizona. Today we're talking about Latino voters. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Rodolfo de la Garza, professor of political science at Columbia University. And still with us is Congressman Bob Menendez, Democrat from New Jersey and the most senior Latino Democrat in Congress, a member of the Democratic leadership. And I know you've got to go, Congressman, but I wanted to ask you, you said earlier that Republicans are hoping to increase their percentages, but accepting the fact they're not going to win the Latino vote. Let me turn that around for just a minute. On a national level anyway, are Democrats taking Latinos for granted?
No, we're not. And we understand that even though we have a long history by which we have enjoyed the support of the Latino community, that we have to be out there every day in both policy and representation in order to continue to achieve the support of the Latino community. And that's why you have to give credit to DNC Chairman Terry McAuliffe, who's held one of the first national debates sponsored by the party on Hispanic issues for the Hispanic electorate. His new senior appointment in the DNC, a Hispanic for the purposes of as a senior advisor to the chairman, the efforts that we're making here in Congress and both the House and the Senate on the Democratic side, the number of candidates that we are running across the country for a variety of positions. This is a party that is committed not only in representation, which we far exceed the Republican Party on as giving opportunity to our community to be part of the decision-making process, but in addition on policy, we're right on education, where we seek to promote the resources necessary necessary so that every child is not left behind and has a world-class education. We're right on immigration, where we believe that there should be an opportunity for earned legalization in this country. We're right on health care because we understand the number of Hispanic Americans who are either uninsured or underinsured and our process to cover them. We're right on the child tax credit, which Republicans left nearly 2 million Hispanic families out. And we're fighting for jobs because we understand that Hispanic unemployment is the highest rate in the last 8 years, and that is not tolerable in the fastest growing community in the country. So we, in no way, are taking for granted our community, either in representation or in policy fights.
Bob Menendez, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Congressman Bob Menendez, a Democrat from New Jersey, with us from our booth on Capitol Hill. Still with us is Rodolfo de la Garza of Columbia University and the Tomas Rivera Policy Institute. And Professor de la Garza, listening to obviously what the congressman said, but let me ask you the same question. Are the parties taking, especially Democrats at this point, do you think that they're taking the Latino vote for granted?
Well, I think there's two ways to answer that. At the rhetorical level, and within the congressional agenda, no. But parties don't necessarily run elections the way they used to. And at that level, it's not clear to me that they are doing the kind of outreach that is absolutely crucial. As I said before, if you don't register anybody and just turn out the registered voters, you greatly increase the Latino vote. So something has to be done. Given all of the statistics that the congressman gave, there's got to be something done about turning out Latino voters by the party. And we have a hard time finding evidence of that. The unions do it, and they are close to the party, obviously.
Mm-hmm. One issue that I thought was curious, I've been researching this, and obviously a lot of the immigrants, Latinos who arrived in this country, come from places that do not have a long tradition of democracy, or in the case of Mexico, have a long tradition of one party completely dominating the democratic process there. Is there a difficulty in getting immigrants involved in what they may not see as they may not have that much experience or that much, you know, credence in democracy?
Well, no, I think there's a difference between their belief in democracy. When we do surveys of them, they clearly articulate that. The difficulty is in the nature of the American political system. I'm here in New York as an example. I have never found a harder place to vote than in New York. They make it difficult to do anything in New York. And so unless you're really committed to voting, you can't do it. So it's
a lot of very smart lawyers have been paid a lot of money to make sure it's like that, too.
That's right. And this changes depending on where you are. But it isn't because people don't want to vote. It's because they don't quite know how to negotiate the system and the parties. And here it really is the case of the parties. Do not play the role, I'm speaking now very specifically of New York, the role that they should to welcome these immigrants.
Rodolfo de la Garza, thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Rodolfo de la Garza, professor of political science at Columbia University in New York and vice president of the Tomas Rivera Policy Institute, which is in New York and in Los Angeles. He was with us from our bureau in New York.